Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I will be the host for the presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, August 24th, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, August 22nd, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 22,719. That's 22719. And for the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 22,720. That's 22720. This morning, A Vision for You presents Knowing Peace, A Life Transformed by 10 Steps. So, but by the time many of us seek refuge within the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, we often find ourselves deeply scarred. And we're scarred by the, you know, we're wounded by the relentless hammering of this devastating illness. And in the doctor's opinion, of course, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn about the, some refer to it as the double whammy of, or the, just the twofold nature of our condition. The, of course, the allergy of the body, this abnormal physical reaction, that ensures that I'm biologically mandated to eat more of the same once I ingest my alcoholic food substance. And perhaps even more insidious, the second part which of my disease, which is the strange mental twist or the obsession of the mind. And that ensures that I can't stop from starting. You know, we're trapped. So it's here amidst collective identification that we come to a profound realization. And what is that realization? Well, our powerlessness over this disease. In fact, we learn that we cannot conquer it alone through sheer will, through our own determination. Although many of us are very determined, we have lots of will, but we can't conquer it that way. Now, while it was comforting for me, at least, to know that we do this deal together, no doubt in my mind that I can't do this alone, but that we can find this solution together. Now, you're not my solution, but we find it together. We learn together. You carried the message to me. That's why we're here. If we could have done this ourselves, we would have. We would have done it already. And yet the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous does not mince words. That means that the language used in our text, it's going to be straightforward, it's direct, and it's unembellished. And we learn many things about our disease, and that's important. We need to learn a lot about our disease. But in its essence, at least for me, the big book is going to answer three critical questions. What is my problem? What is the solution to my problem? And then how does that solution become manifest? In other words, how does that solution come to light? Well, the problem, lack of power. The solution is going to be access to power, perhaps a relationship with power. And how does that come about? A spiritual awakening through the activation of the 12 steps. Is it simple? Sure. It's very simple. Is it easy? No, not really. It's not very easy. Page 59. Says, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1 through 12, it's all there for me in black and white. That is the way out for someone like me, someone that has this hopeless disease of mind and body. And I need to be clear in what the program is and what it isn't. What's the result of following this prescription, this program of action, the 12 steps? Well, Bill uses, as you know, a variety of words to describe the result. He uses words like a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, a personality change, a psychic change. There's others that would tell me a lot of other words too, I'm sure. And I can analyze the distinction of these words all I want. I like to do that. But invariably, I learn that they all mean the same thing. A change, a transformation at a spiritual level. Page 46, we found that as soon as we were able to set aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. You know, I've heard that the first three steps prepare me for the work, The actual work is done in steps 4 through 9. And steps 10, 11, and 12 are designed to keep me on this spiritual pathway. I've got to do this for a lifetime. Yes, I do. Where I continue, I improve, I practice. And on page 153, I'm reminded, the age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. So joining us this morning to share her insights on recovery is Zigrid F. And Zigrid is a recovered compulsive overeater. She resides in North Carolina. She's devoted, I know this to be true, she's devoted to the 12 steps and the 12th tradition. She's committed to carrying a message of hope to our fellowship. And so it's with much gratitude that we welcome her to the line this morning. Good morning, Zigrid.
Good morning, Larry, and thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. Truly appreciated. Hello, everyone. I am Zigrid F. I previously am from Florida, so for those of you who are thinking, what? I thought Zigrid was in Florida. I was, but I now live in North Carolina. I am a grateful 12-stepper and a recovered compulsive overeater. So I'm one of five children born to an alcoholic and a food addict who were both raised in alcoholic homes. My oldest brother, a drug addict with mental illness, committed suicide. My oldest sister is bipolar. My second sister and I are food addicts. And everyone in my family of origin qualifies codependent, typical of those who grow up with alcoholism. From childhood, I remember my dad isolating in the living room after work to drink his gin and read the paper. We kids weren't allowed in that room, and if we wanted to talk to him, we had to do it from the entryway. I also remember hiding cookies we'd baked and Halloween candy from my mother, who even now, at 92 with dementia, still remembers to warn herself and others not to eat too much or we'll get fat. And my first food memory as a child is of hiding in the bathroom to eat as much chewable vitamin C as I wanted. I yo-yo dieted for about 30 years until I was 48. During those years, I gained and lost hundreds, I don't know, maybe even a few thousand pounds. I'm 5'2" and my highest weight was 255 pounds. In 2012, I'd lost 30 pounds on Weight Watchers again. And in 2013, I gained it back plus some. I was complaining to my older sister about paying it back, and she said these words that changed my life. Zigrid, have you ever thought of OA? Well, I hadn't, or if I had, I hadn't taken it too seriously. So I went straight to the internet and found the OA website. And after about 10 seconds of research, because, you know, I skipped directions and thought I had to move fast and accurate to be worthy, I found and took the OA quiz. Unsurprisingly, the results were completely conclusive. I am a compulsive overeater. So what did I do? I went right back to Weight Watchers, more determined than ever to lose the weight on my own power. And I was successful again for about 9 months until the day came when I took one bite, two, then four. And you all know where this is going. But that time was different. It felt like I had a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other. We all know what the devil says. Eat. It doesn't matter anyway. You can diet another day. You're always going to be fat, so why are you fighting it? But the angel, that was new. She whispered, "Do you see it now? You have this disease. You were powerless over food. Go to a meeting." That was in January of 2014, 11 and a half years ago. I think it's important to mention that in addition to yo-yo dieting for 30 years, I was also an overachiever. I established and grew a successful career. I married my college sweetheart. I bought and I lived in a smaller and then a larger house. We had two beautiful children. Sounds great, right? I was living the American dream. But I was really unhappy. I was driven to succeed in everything I did. No mistakes were allowed. I was a perfectionist with myself and those around me. I had trouble with relationships. I reacted to everything in a 0 to 100, or as a close friend in program calls it, a 0 to doom manner. No wonder I had anxiety. There was a cruel taskmaster in my head telling me that I would never be good enough, do enough, have enough, and I'd always be fat. Now, in retrospect, I can see the imbalance of my thoughts, which were almost always at the poles. Life was great, or it was miserable. My marriage was solid, or it was ending. I was being promoted, or I was about to be fired. Back then, I had no idea what serenity meant, and I definitely did not know peace. When I joined OA, I just wanted help with my food problem, but I was willing to do anything. The first meetings I went to were by telephone because I was too ashamed to show my physical body at an in-person meeting. Regardless, I found a sponsor and we worked through the first 3 steps together using the big book. It was going great until she demanded I attend a telephone meeting on Saturday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. At that time, I worked full-time and I had 2 young teenage kids. That was really sacred family time. I asked if I could attend a different meeting and she said no. So we parted ways. And in retrospect, I know God was guiding my journey. After working the first 3 steps and eating absently for that time, my self-esteem had grown enough that I was willing to go to meetings in person. I was advised to attend 6 different ones and I found a big book meeting that I really liked. I found a new sponsor there and continued my step studies, this time using the OA 12 and 12. It took me almost a year to work through the steps the first time. And during that year, so many of the 9th step promises came true for me. I remember the first time I understood a situation that used to baffle me, and I was dumbfounded. I started to understand serenity, and I started knowing what peace was. But I still had bouts of anxiety and sleeplessness, too. My second sponsor left program to have stomach band surgery, and I didn't find another one for a year. I continued to go to meetings and had sponsees, but it wasn't enough at that time, and I saw some weight start to creep back on. I found a new sponsor, and with her, I reworked the steps using the big book and a big book workbook. That was a really powerful time in my learning. My understanding of myself, my higher power, and the 12-step program grew as I learned and I relearned. Before that time, I did 10 steps infrequently and sort of clumsily, but this sponsor gave me feedback that I sometimes really didn't want to hear. I remember feeling so frustrated when she repeatedly told me, "Sigrid, acceptance is the answer to all your problems," which, by the way, is code for "Sigrid, stop trying to control things beyond your control." Over time, I learned that when I wasn't in acceptance, I needed to do a 10th step, but I still fought them. It felt like if I gave up control I was desperately seeking, I would die. So I'd wait until the situation was unbearable to do one. And then when I really couldn't take the pain of it anymore, I'd finally do the 10th step. And then I'd have peace between my ears, and I'd be really grateful. There was some point in this process when I was completely aggravated with myself because my will wanted to delay doing the 10th step, even knowing that once I did it, I'd find peace again. Stubborn, stubborn, stubborn. But I've learned, and God is really patient, and God will give me as many opportunities to learn something as I need. And sometimes that's an awful lot of time before I finally understand and learn the lesson I'm supposed to. Around 2016, I started listening to A Vision for You. It was through the examples and experiences of people on these lines that I started to better understand what it meant to live in steps 10, 11, and 12. Listening to others also helped me to see just how often I was restless, irritable, or discontented, or RIDS, as I've heard it called and I like to call it. I also learned to ask myself, why am I delaying doing the 10th step? So, borrowing a tagline from Nike, I stopped negotiating and just did it. In addition to my sponsor and many other fellows, I have a very, very close partner in recovery. We're so close that sometimes it feels like we're looking in the mirror. We've shared so many tense steps that we know each other's triggers, secrets, and most importantly, we can see each other's mental blind spots. We're both committed to giving rigorous, honest feedback, even if we know it will be hard for the other one to hear. How many times she put a finger on exactly the lie that my disease wanted me to believe. And I'm fortunate that she's told me I do the same for her. We tell each other what each of us can't see by ourselves. These days, we both have bigger God squads, but when I know there is something I can't see, I often reach out to my special friend, who, by the way, is listening today. So I'm sending a shout out. I love you, and thank you for helping me on this sometimes hilarious and sometimes exhausting journey. The bottom line is this: through 10 steps, prayer, and service, I've been growing up. Actively practicing this miraculous program of recovery for the past 11 and a half years has transformed me. I'm more patient, kinder, a better listener. I have bigger self-esteem and a smaller ego. I can sometimes laugh at my mistakes and the mistakes of others. I'm learning to respond instead of react. I can survive emotions I used to suppress. And the best part of all, the big majority of my days, I know what serenity is, and I know peace. I occasionally still get anxious, but I rarely can't sleep due to obsessive thoughts. The following paragraph from page 84 of the Big Book sums up the 10th step, and it's one of my favorites. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So I'm going to break this down for how I think about it. The first line is, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. To me, this means I have to continue using the steps my whole life. They aren't one and done. 10 steps are a short form version of steps 4 through 9. By doing them and asking God for help, I can grow and learn as some defects are removed and others unfold. This step is intended to help me deal with my life, especially when I find myself with the RIDS, restless, irritable, or discontented. And that brings me to the second line. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. This is the step 4 part of step 10. To be honest, in my early days of program, I didn't know when I was upset until I was about to boil over or I was already yelling. Someone suggested that I start to notice earlier physical warning signs, like when my shoulders were hunching up to my ears, or my heart rate started to speed up, or my face was feeling flushed. And I could do that. So once I started seeing the physical signs, I could do my best to pause, maybe even backtrack, see what had triggered me. With that information, I could do the 10th step. And as I did more of them, I noticed that I had some recurring and persistent defects, like insecurity, controlling, judgment, and vanity. Knowing these defects helped me to start to spot them in my thoughts before any physical sign even happened. The next sentence is, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. For me, this means that I need to demonstrate to God that I understand what defects cropped up and to ask for God's help. I can demonstrate my understanding and willingness for a defect to be removed, but only God and God's timing can actually remove it. The next sentence is, we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Most, but not all, of my 10 steps are written. I find it easier to look at the situation and document more specifically how my selfishness, dishonesty, and fear appeared. At the end of my written 10 steps, I write a prayer asking God for help. And once it's complete, I share the whole thing with another compulsive overeater. This ensures no secrets and rigorous honesty. The one receiving my 10th step may or may not have feedback, and that's okay too. When I do harm someone with my words or actions, I often know because I feel squirmy inside. So when the situation warrants it, I do make amends as quickly as I can. If I'm not sure what the amends should be, I discuss that with another fellow too. So moving down the paragraph, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. The reason this is crucial for me is more often than not, I had to do a 10th step because of my own broken thinking. Once I've turned it over to God by asking for help, the best thing I can do is stop thinking about me. And the best way to do that is to help someone else. That might be a program fellow or a family member or someone at work, as long as I'm out of my head and helping someone else. And the last phrase in the paragraph, love and tolerance of others is our code. As much as I want to be perfect, I make mistakes, and so do other people. Sometimes I do 10th steps because I take someone else's mistake personally. Like when someone veers into my lane of traffic and scares the bejesus out of me. I used to flash them a bird screaming obscenities about how stupid they are. And of course I thought they did it on purpose. But through program, I came to realize I've accidentally veered into another person's lane, scared them too. And it really was just a mistake. I hadn't targeted them. So today, I still might get scared, but I accept the other person's mistake. And instead of freaking out in anger, I show gratitude to God that an actual car accident didn't occur. But is love and tolerance our code so that we play nice with others? Well, maybe. But in this example, by getting angry and overreacting, I was the loser. The other driver didn't see or hear me. They just went blithely on their way. But by not taking it personally, giving the other driver the benefit of the doubt, I win. By living by love and tolerance, I keep peace between my ears. And that's the goal. This all sounds easy, right? Ha, it wasn't. I had to learn to pause, to stop what I was doing, no matter what it was, to deal with my rids, and that was really, really hard for me. My ego didn't want to acknowledge that I could possibly have a part or be wrong in some way, so I'd procrastinate. And during that delaying period, the situation would grow in my head until the pain of not doing the 10th step was worse than admitting I might have made a mistake. So for years, I had to practice stopping what I was doing. And as I practiced stopping, it's become easier. And as I practiced 10 steps, they've become easier too. Fast forward to today, more often than not, I want to stop what I'm doing. Because the sooner I can get my part out of my head and given to God, the sooner I can return to peace between my ears. I'd like to share more about why I write most 10 steps. I do it because the tool of writing helps me to organize my thoughts. I can pause and let God in. It slows me down to think more. It's harder for me to exaggerate or to be dishonest. My written 10 steps have 5 parts. 1, what am I resentful or fearful of? 2, why? 3, whether my fear, self-esteem, security, personal relationships, sex relations, or pride were affected. 4, what is my part? Specifically, where have I been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or fearful? And 5, a prayer asking for the removal of my shortcomings that I might be more useful to God. Once complete, I send the written 10th to a partner in recovery. And if they want to give feedback or I need to discuss it further, we'll talk or we'll text. And I really have to turn my attention to someone I can help. I also think it's important to tell you that while a vast majority of my 10 steps are documented, there are times that I'm baffled by my feelings or I have no idea why I'm restless, irritable, or discontent. So I will call someone to help me through it. Having said all that, since I have been documenting 10 steps since 2017, I thought I'd give you 5 real-life examples. I hope to demonstrate how the 10-step process has helped me to navigate many different kinds of disruptions in my mind and in my life for the past several years. After each 10th step, I summarize some of the more obvious shortcomings. Number one is on an everyday fear. The context, I moved to North Carolina this past April after 32 years. I was in Florida, and on July 1st, I retired, so big year. I wanted both of these things, but my husband hasn't moved permanently yet because of a delay in the sale of his business. So I've been on my own a lot. Okay, so here it is. One, what am I resentful or fearful of? A day by myself. Two, why? I don't have a lot of friends or interactions with others yet because I'm new here. Three, this affects my fear, my self-esteem, my security, my personal relations, my sex relations, and my pride. Where have I been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or fearful? I've been selfish. I want people around me to have fun with. I want my husband here. I've been dishonest. My daughter and her fiance are here, and I see them frequently. I have many friends, and I can make phone calls. I can attend Zoom meetings, or I can go out. God is always with me. I'm never really alone. And it's up to me to put myself out there. Fearful of being isolated, of getting depressed, of retiring and not having regular interactions with people. And what defects? Fear, insecurity, self-pity, lacking being present, future tripping, and controlling. And number 5, here's my prayer. Dear God, maybe it's jitters about retiring, or maybe it really is just fears about today, but I know that they indicate a lack of faith in you. Help me, God, to give you my fears. Put one foot in front of the other and get on with it. Lead me, God, as to the next right thing and help me to be of service to you today. Amen. Number 2 is work-related, and the context here is I was in a new work situation, and I found a coworker of mine to be incompetent and arrogant. 1, what am I resentful or fearful of? George. 2, why? He is condescending and a lousy manager who would rather place blame on others than take some responsibility. 3, this affects my fear, my self-esteem, my security, and my pride. 4, where have I been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or fearful? Selfish. I want everything to be fair, my script. I want George to be who I want him to be. Self-seeking. His behavior hurts my feelings and pride, and then I feel insecure. Dishonest. I truly don't know what is best. Only God does. Fearful. That I irritated our boss by telling him my thoughts about George. My defects. Superiority, perfectionism, martyr, insecurity, critical, judgment, arrogant, unkind, impatient. Prayer. Dear God, I am good enough and I was professional. I know you have a plan and I can and do trust that plan. Please lift me from the shortcomings that block me from who you would have me be. Help me to act as if I am secure, patient, compassionate, humble, and kind. Amen. Number 3 is about a big life event. Moving, changing jobs, and my youngest son going to college all at the same time. The context, I lived in Florida. I was actually at my 35th high school reunion in New Jersey. The role at my company, which was entirely remote, was ending, and I needed a new one. I was offered a great new role in North Carolina, and they wanted me, and I wanted it, but it was on site, at least for a while. The day before I moved to Charlotte, for my new job, my son left for college. 1, what am I resentful or fearful of? I'm afraid of moving and living alone, changing jobs, and sad that my son was growing up and leaving home. Why? These are big changes. Even though they are all good changes and I want them, I'm still frightened and grieving. 3, this affects my fear, self-esteem, personal relationships, and sex relations. 4, where have I been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or fearful? Selfish. I want to keep working from home. I want life to be easy and predictable. I want to eat to avoid the feelings and comfort myself and not gain weight. Dishonest. I know that moving to North Carolina temporarily for this role is the path God wants for me. I'll only be 2 hours from my son and I can see him sometimes. I want to be happy and proud of my son and not feel any of the grief of my children leaving. I know that God is my back and it is my faith that is faltering. I would be bored if everything was easy, and I know it. Fearful of moving and leaving my husband and friends in Florida, of getting old, of being away from my husband during the week and some weekends, of meeting new people, of failing at my new job. Defects, insecurity, rigidity, self-pity, controlling, avoiding feeling, not being present, future tripping. Prayer. Lord, please help me to be peaceful about these changes, knowing that you have my best interests in mind. Help me to give up control of my food, the scale, my past, future, and today. Please help me to live in the present today. I'm so very grateful for being here at my high school reunion with old schoolmates. I wasn't expecting complete acceptance, but that's what I've gotten. I thought I was crazy back then, and I guess I still am, but they don't seem to remember it that way. Please help me to listen and to be of service to those around me today and tonight. Please help me to do the work to stay in the bounds of my committed food today. Thank you, God. Amen. 4 is about my mom's slow, steady health decline. The context. In late March 2024, my mother, who I didn't have a good relationship with, wound up near death. After that, I traveled from Florida to Seattle every 3 weeks for 7 months. 1, what am I resentful or fearful of? Going to Seattle again. Why? Watching my mom die is painful and frightening. 3, this affects my fear, self-esteem, personal relationships, sex relations, and pride. 4, where have I been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or fearful? Selfish. Her dying is messing with the peace between my ears. I wish she would die already so that I can stop traveling and get the grieving over with so I don't have to feel these powerful emotions anymore. Dishonest. This is part of life that everyone goes through. It is something not to be missed as part of that, and God will help me through it if I can open enough to let God in. Fearful. Afraid of grief and sadness. Afraid of not understanding my feelings or others' feelings. Afraid of being out of control. Afraid of being left without parents and getting old. Afraid of codependent stuff with my family. Afraid of being abandoned and alone. Defects, self-pity, egotistical, it's all about me. Fear, avoiding feelings, controlling, impatient, not being present, future tripping. Prayer, dear God, I have anxiety. I am full of fear and grief, discontent, and even anger. The combination of emotions is powerful and scary and making me a little crazy. Thank you for helping me to be abstinent and not eat any popcorn at the movies last night, but I have to tell you, I feel like a kettle that could blow at any moment. I feel like I could cry at any moment. Help me, God. Help me to stop compartmentalizing my feelings I dislike, which then bubble up in unhealthy ways anyway. Help me back to a place of gratitude. I'm struggling being grateful for those feelings. And this time, I just feel overwhelmed. Please take my selfishness and fear today. Today is a beautiful day to be spent in your service, but I fear I am stuck in my head and with these feelings forever. Help me to listen more than I speak. Help me to seek comfort, not to isolate. Help me to know your next right thing and obey it. Amen. P.S. to this one. During those visits, God actually led me to make amends to my mom, which freed me to believe that she'd loved me all along. I was 60. I had deeply believed for my whole life that I was not loved. Not long after that, I had another intense experience with my mother, where she made amends to me. And looking back, I now understand why God was so insistent that I go and keep going to Seattle. And I'm really grateful that I obeyed. Number five is about the scale and being a pre-diabetic. The context, I want to control the outcomes if I'm doing my footwork. I was steadily losing weight as part of the plan to control my blood sugar and avoid becoming diabetic. My weekly weigh-in was 4.4 pounds up. What am I resentful or fearful of? The number on the scale and getting diabetes. Why? I'm doing my footwork with food and exercise, and my weight loss isn't following my script. This affects my fear, my self-esteem, my security, my personal relationships, my sex relations, and my pride. Self-seeking, dishonest, or fearful. I'm selfish because my expectations are tied to an outcome over which I have no control. I want a linear solution. I feel I've done everything I can, and I've been patient enough, and I want good results now. Have I been dishonest? I cannot control the outcomes of my weight loss or A1C. I'm not a number on the scale or a blood sugar measure. The number on the scale and my blood sugar number are data points, not my judge and jury. I'm fearful. I'm fearful of being fat again. I fear not losing weight and getting diabetes. I fear heart disease because my cholesterol crept up, which is another number and data point. I fear death. I fear being unworthy. My defects, fear, impatience, controlling, exaggeration, polar thinking, lack of balance, egotistical, keeping the negative spotlight on me, insecurity, self-pity, I'm not present and I'm future tripping. And here's my prayer. Dear God, the numbers have spun up all kinds of angst and fear in me today. And when I look in the mirror, I see a fat person. I've been doing my footwork, but it doesn't seem to be making any change or leading to an outcome. Well, the outcome I want. God, my will is strong to make losing weight happen, but I am not in control of the outcome, only of my footwork. You've been helping me to eat per my plan. You've been helping me to substitute alternatives with lower saturated fat. You've been helping my A1C to reduce with the new medication. It's my patience that lacks. Please take my impatience and my fear of the future. Help me to remember to enjoy this beautiful day you've given me. Help me to be of service to you and others, to have patience, and to give myself and my body love. Thank you. Amen. So hopefully these five examples have been helpful to you. But as I was putting this presentation together, it dawned on me that they don't really explain the transformation. So next, I'm going to give you five examples that are really miracles. There are recent examples of when I didn't do a 10th step because I didn't need to. Like this. Number one, when I was rear-ended in bumper-to-bumper traffic and I stayed calm and collected, not just on the outside, but on the inside too. No freakout, no anxiety. Even when the person in the car with me started to escalate, I didn't. I accepted it, and I was really grateful no one was injured. I had patience for the other person in the car with me, and I had patience to wait for the police. This is a huge transformation from how I would have behaved in the past. The defects of controlling and expecting perfection, judging, egotistically knowing just how things should have been, these didn't happen. Instead, I was fully in the moment. I was patient. I was grateful, I was compassionate, and I was kind. Or this one, number two, when I held my tongue about my son's driving in spite of 3 days in the car driving almost 2,000 miles with him. He wasn't tailgating or doing anything really egregious. He was sitting in the left lane for longer than I liked. I still want to control things, but if I wasn't willing to drive the whole way, and that definitely wasn't an option, then I needed to let him drive the way he was going to drive and shut my trap, which I did. I got busy knitting, playing a game, or just chatting. And the old defects of controlling, criticism, judgment, egotistically thinking I know best, these didn't happen. Instead, I was patient. I paused long enough to hold my tongue and let God in. I was humble in that I knew I don't know everything and that that was okay. Or how about this one? Number three, when I didn't rail at the customer service agent because my new washing machine was hooked up with hot water only and my first load was Gentle Cycle.
Whoa.
Seriously? Telephone customer service agents were a prime target for my pent-up anger at the unfairness of things. But I didn't. And not only was it a very pleasant chat in which she completely agreed with me, the service took up correctly, was set, and done within a couple of days. Some of the defects that didn't crop up were criticism, perfectionism, meanness, superiority, judgment. Instead, I was friendly. I was accepting. I was kind. I was patient. And I was understanding. Okay, how about this one? Number four. When I courteously but clearly asked the contractor doing work for me to turn around the dynamic that had me chasing him for an update to things that he had set the deadline for, instead of him proactively updating me. In the past, I would have raised my voice to him in anger and frustration and might have called his boss. I didn't know how to set a boundary or speak the truth kindly. You know how the ninth step promises say you'll suddenly know how to handle situations that used to baffle us? Well, that's this. Before program, I only knew how to be sarcastic or snarky, yell, demand. And of course, that rarely got me anywhere. And worse, it made me feel like a lowlife. Defects removed here were intending to hurt, perfectionism, criticism and judgment, controlling, superiority. Instead, I was calm, direct, kind, patient, and clear. So I could do this all day, but let's just do one more. Number five. Last Saturday, my husband called me from Florida to tell me that he was in the emergency room because of shortness of breath. And they wanted him to stay overnight for some additional tests and observation. I was in North Carolina. I couldn't just run over there. I didn't freak out and go immediately to, he's having a heart attack and going to die, or I need to get to him now to make sure everything will be okay, or my personal favorite, he can't die because I'll be left all alone. No, I didn't. I didn't like that I couldn't be with him, but I was grateful that he had gone there. If he was having or going to have a heart attack, he was exactly where he needed to be. Instead, I could be present for him. I called him hourly to see how the boredom between medical professionals and tests was going. I made jokes with him. I kept him company the best I could from afar. Defects that didn't show up. I wasn't afraid of the future. I didn't try to control the situation. I didn't rant or panic or go straight to worst-case scenario? No. I trusted God, my husband, the doctors, and the hospital to do their work that everything would be okay. I was patient, balanced, pragmatic, helpful, kind and loving, supportive, and I slept that night. Yeah, I know. Who am I? So yeah, I've done a lot of 10 steps, and yeah, I'm going to continue to do them, along with steps 11 and 12. But look at the defects of character that not only weren't there, but were replaced with compassion, patience, kindness, tolerance, flexibility, acceptance, more. Why? Because of this, because of all of you, my partners in recovery. And of course, because of my higher power. But I truly believe that the 10th step has been and will continue to unlock shortcomings that I kept and keep hidden, even from myself. And for most of my life and the consistent practice, well, I think you get the point. So I'd like to pause here to look at how many of the 9th step promises on pages 83 and 84 have come true just in these examples. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will comprehend the word serenity and will know peace. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Bottom line is this: I am responsible for my footwork. God is responsible for the outcome. This is true with literally everything in my life, so I'm going to say it again. I am responsible for my footwork, and God is responsible for the outcome. In the Serenity Prayer, the second line asks God to give me the courage to do the things I can. I can do the footwork. In fact, it's almost the only thing I can do. And only I can do it. No one, not my sponsor, my spouse, a partner in recovery, not even God will do my footwork for me. But even if I do my very best footwork, the outcome is God's domain. And God gives me what I need, not necessarily what I want. I've used 10 steps to rail against the unfairness or fears because an outcome I didn't want, only to find hours, days, months, or years later that the outcome was exactly what I needed at the time, or that the outcome was still terrible, but God had my back and made lemons out of lemonade. I just didn't know it yet, but God did. The rest of the Serenity Prayer essentially asks God to help me differentiate between what I can and cannot do, what I can and cannot control, and the wisdom to know the difference. Again, the footwork is within my control. The 12 steps have transformed me. I was a woman who ate to stuff her feelings, to keep an armor of fat around her, to protect myself and isolate from others. I suffered from anxiety, and I'd often lay awake at night obsessing about something I was sure was going to happen tomorrow. OA is my first 12-step program, and when I joined, I knew I was broken, but I really didn't understand how. I just knew I was fat and wanted to be thin. But by following the instructions in the Big Book and finding a God of my understanding, I came to know what peace between my ears felt like, and I've stayed for that peace. Using the 12 steps, I've also come to know myself better. The 10th step in particular has helped me to see the defects that block me from being the best version of me, but also that I have assets I didn't know I had, much less how to use. Perhaps the biggest transformation is that I like myself today, and that is another miracle. So I will gladly continue trudging this road of happy destiny, knowing that it might not always be easy, but if I am painstaking about the next phase of my development, as I've been in the past 11 and a half years, then I will continue to be amazed. I will know even more new freedoms and happinesses. I will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will continue to know peace. Thank you for allowing me to do service today. I pass.
Thank you, Sigrid F. Thank you so much for a very clear and thorough treatment of Step 10. It's a real treasure for our archive collection. So much appreciated, Sigrid. Now, before we transition to our Q&A, let me give you today's share ID number. That number is 22,701. That's 22,721. Brett said 22,721. And also, I'm going to invite you to stick around after the recorded portion of our program when it ends this morning. That's where we will provide Sigrid's contact information in case you care to reach out to her directly. So with that, if you do have a question for Sigrid, questions only, please press star one and give me your first name, and we'll post some questions for Sigrid. Who has a question?
Tiffany C. Loretta H.
Sherry S. Tiffany, Jerry and F. I also heard, was that Jerry or Terry?
Sherry.
Neither, right? Sherry?
Hanayeta.
Okay, I got Hanayeta.
Loretta H.
And I got you, Loretta. And then Pete, I got you in there.
Mary Lee R. in Oregon.
Say that first name again to my old ears.
Mary Lee.
Mary Lee. Thank you, Mary Lee. Who else?
Holly.
Here's
S.
who I heard. Okay, after Holly, let's stop, and I'm just going to tell you who I heard in case I missed that first round of people that gave their name. I heard Tiffany, I heard Sherry, Hanayeta, Loretta, Pete, Mary Lee, and Holly. Why don't we stop with that at first, and then we'll kind of see where we are time-wise. So first up with the question is Tiffany, followed by Sherry. Good morning, Tiffany. Tiffany, press star one. Okay, I'm not hearing Tiffany, so Tiffany, we will come back to you. Sherry,
are you available?
Oh, there you are.
Yeah.
Hi, Tiffany.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can. No,
okay.
don't be sorry. You're good.
Thank you so much for your service, and thank you, Sigrid, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. My question is, sometimes blockage can happen when trying to see where we're selfish, dishonest, when in fear or having mm-hmm. a resentment. What are some things that you do in order to be able to see your part when really wrapped up in some of these emotions?
So thanks for the question, Tiffany. So in the beginning, it was really hard, and I think I listened a lot. I listened a lot at meetings, and when people would share, I could see it better in them than I could see it in myself. But once I could see it in them, I might be able to look at myself. And then I would also, I think I talked over more of those early 10 steps with people. I really switched to doing more writing in 2017, but I think I would talk about it. I think it was also in taking 10th steps, Tiffany. I think in taking 10th steps, I could say, oh, wait, I've thought like that, or I've behaved like that. And that's what that person is assigning to it. And so I could go, oh, that's happening with me too. But yeah, it was a discovery process. It wasn't innate. Right? I wanted to hide from that stuff. I wanted to be right all the time. So I had to have an open mind, which also came with time. But I think it was like a bit of a learning process. Sometimes readings too, I'll tell you, the daily readers, those have been really helpful too. You can read about different defects of character, or you can read, go to the index and look for like 10 steps for different things. Sometimes different things will come up in those readings that you're like, oh, yeah, that's me too. And I hope that helps.
Thanks for the question, Tiffany. Okay, next up we have Sherry, followed by Hanayeta. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Sigrid. This is Larry. This is Sherry S. in Florida. And thank you, Sigrid. It's always good to hear you. I have done 10 steps only through superficial, although superficial, and I have a deep fear of going deeper. How did you get over the fear of what you might discover and not feeling less than, giving it away and trusting that person too?
Yeah. Fear is so strong, you know, that we hear over and over in the room that faith is the opposite of fear. But taking those first steps to faith when you're that deeply afraid can be really a trial. I think maybe if if you have people who know you really well and you trust, you can ask them, what defects do you see? Or one, you know, if you think it's too overwhelming, you know, what defects do you see? And have an open mind that just maybe they've experienced it before. And Sherry, I mean, we know each other pretty well, so I'd be happy to do that with you if you ever wanted to do that. I would work with you on that as well.
All right. Thank you for the question, Sherry. Next up, we have Hannah Yetta, followed by Loretta. Hannah Yetta, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Larry, for your service. It's always great to hear you. Excuse me, Sigrid. Thank you for, I love your examples, your written examples that you gave us. It was like a sheet into your life. So when I do a 10-step, I always do the sick man. I do what you do, but I always also add the sick man's prayer. Have you ever done that, or do you know what I'm talking about? My other question is yes or no. Do you do a 10-step every day?
Okay. So absolutely, yes, I've done the sick man's prayer. I just didn't happen to be in any of the examples that I gave today. But yeah, absolutely, I've done that. I've done the set-aside prayer as well from time to time when I'm just too in it. I do an 11th step each day, which includes if I didn't clean up something during the day. So if there is a 10th step that's left over from the day and I realize it during the 11th step, I might do a 10th step. Otherwise, I do my 10th step when I am restless, irritable, or discontent. I don't wait for some certain time of the day to do them.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the question, Hanietta. Okay, next up we have Loretta, followed by Pete. Loretta, good morning. All in all, former flight attendants, Loretta, press star one. Good morning. Loretta, can't hear you. All right. Well, you know what? We'll come back to Loretta. Pete, good morning to you.
Larry, I'm here. I got an phone call in between,
are.
And I couldn't. Thank you, Larry, of course, for all you've done for us. And Sigrid, you are saving my life. You know that. I have had the pleasure to meet you here in North Carolina, and you're a treasure. My question is, you talked about responsibility. And that is key for me in my work. And is that responsibility, you know, we let go of the results, but the footwork is so important. Is that because you really believe that you have a God within you? You know, and just, can you just explain that essence of you that makes you take responsibility? Thank you.
Okay. I will try, Loretta. And thanks for the question. So I want to pause then and say, you know, well, what is God, right? Because everybody has their different conception of what a higher power is. And I use the word God, and I will often even use male pronouns just because it's easy for people to understand what I'm talking about. My higher power is not manly or even humanly. It's more of a pervasive, positive energy of kindness, guidance, love. It's in everything in the universe, including me, everything, everyone, and is available to anyone as long as they want it, as long as they want to be a part of it. So that guiding energy, you know, I still have free will. I can still do what I want. very clearly, right? Because I ate my way up to 255 pounds. Like, I can do, I can, I have a lot of control over different things about me. But that's all I have. Like, all of the other people, places, and things in my life, I don't have control over. I sometimes want control. I fight for control. I talked about my sponsor and, like, figured acceptance is the answer to all your problems, and it still is, right? But because I have free will, I have to use that free will too. And if my free will is to not do program routines, then I'm not taking responsibility for my own recovery. And I can't really expect, well, not only can I not expect, it's not going to happen, right? The only one with responsibility for me is me. And no one else has responsibility for me but me. So if I'm not the one to do my morning routines, my evening routines, my 10 steps, my phone calls, attend meetings, say prayers during the day, gratitude, make a point of being present and just, for even a couple of seconds, just taking a minute and being grateful for the physical ability I have in this moment, you know, that kind of stuff. If I'm not willing to do that stuff, well, no one else is going to do it for me. So that's my responsibility. And I hope that helped, Loretta.
Thank you, Loretta. Okay, next up we have Pete, followed by Mary Lee. Pete, good morning.
Yeah, thanks, Larry, for taking the meeting. We appreciate your service. And Zigrid, thanks for that presentation. It was really articulate and well thought out, and appreciate the preparation. So my question is, in step 11, it tells us throughout the day we may face in disturbance and disruption. And I'm paraphrasing here. It says throughout the day many of these things are going to occur. So my question is, when do you do that versus doing this thing that you're calling a 10th step?
Yeah, okay. So, well, the 10th step itself has a little bit of 11 in it, right? Because I always do a prayer at the end of my 10th step. So anytime I'm pausing to pray, the 10th step itself, you know, I think the formula of it isn't necessarily, you know, do a thorough prayer, but whatever. So I think that's a little bit. But during the day, so I start my day, I do something called a God letter in the morning. I also meditate in the morning. I do not every day, but I often do readings, daily readers, and I listen to A Vision for You or go to other meetings almost every day of the week. I also, at night, do an 11-step practice, and I often journal as well for gratitude. During the day, at one point when I was first starting this, I set my timer for 10 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. to make sure that I would stop and pause and show some gratitude or send a prayer up. And I don't do that anymore. It's a little bit more ingrained in my life now. But sometimes I'll just stop what I'm doing and look up at the sky and appreciate how beautifully blue it is, or I will walk out to let the dog out in the morning and feel cool air on my skin and just have gratitude for the nature around me, the trees, the birds singing. I also really enjoy, that happens to me a lot in nature. I think it happens a lot to a lot of people when they're in nature. But even if I'm sitting in traffic, if I'm starting to get irked because, you know, I'm being held up from what I want, then maybe it's time to sit back and say, you know what, God, okay, you're slowing me down today. I don't know why. Maybe I'm avoiding an accident. Maybe I need to be late for some reason, maybe whatever, but this is in your hands, God. And I may just turn a bad situation into, okay, not something I control. God's in control. Well, that's okay. So I'm going to be late. So what? You know, so that's some examples, Pete. I hope that's helpful.
Thanks for the question, Pete. And next up, we have Mary Lee, followed by Holly. Mary Lee, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Larry. This is Mary Lee in Eugene, Oregon. And Sigrid, wow. A personal question, I would like to know where you live in North Carolina. But my program questions are, there's a lot of character defects, and lately it seems to be that two are hanging around, and that's impatience and procrastination. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, first of all, Raleigh is the area. I live in the Raleigh area of North Carolina. Impatience and procrastination. So impatience is one that I swear I think I'm going to have for the rest of my life. And all I can do is just continue to practice. You know, like if I, what happened? Somebody recently was telling me about a situation with a personal situation in their life where they weren't sure if their relationship was going to work out. And we were talking about how I want to know now. I want to know now. Like, am I ready to walk out the door now? No. But I want to know now that this relationship is going to work out, right? And that's totally impatience. And I am so full of impatience too. But whenever the different things in my life, whether I'm sitting in traffic or it's a life event that's coming or something that I know is going to happen that I just want it over with, it's all about impatience. I just try to do a 10-step, go back to God, try to remember God's plan's better than the one I can try to control. God's timing is better than any I can try to control. Sometimes I'll say a mantra, you know, to kind of move past the impatience and get back to serenity and peace. So that's what I do for impatience. Procrastination. And by the way, I don't think we ever win. Like, I don't know that I'm ever going to get there. Even though sometimes in the examples I gave of, you know, the miracles in my life, sometimes I am patient, but I'm not always patient. Like, I'm just going to have to keep working on that. Anyway, procrastination, to me, the biggest thing that helped me was stop the debating society, figure, just do it. No more debating. No more considering, no more negotiating, no more debating, Nike, just do it. And there was a lot earlier in program, especially, I was like, just Nike, just do it. Don't want to do it. Something I learned at work that I found very helpful, and I find this helpful in my life as well. It's a concept called eat the frog first. Nobody, of course, is really going to eat the frog, but it's, do the thing that you dislike the most first. Because when you procrastinate and you put it off, it actually puts a shadow on the rest of your day, because while you're doing all these other things that aren't as hard or that you weren't as intimidated by, you are less peaceful through them. But if you do that thing that you really don't want to do first, the rest of your day goes by so much more smoothly, peacefully, easily, happily. I hope that helps, Mary Lee.
Thank you, Mary Lee. Okay, next up is Holly. And then, you know, we have time for more questions if there are more questions. So, Holly, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for your service. Sigrid, I really appreciate your share. I'm coming back. This is my first meeting in months and months, and very powerful. I identified with a lot of what you had to share. My question is, there's just a constant struggle to regulate my emotions. Pretty common, I'm sure. Can you speak to someone coming back into program and just immediately jumping into doing those 10 steps just to dig out of that emotional baggage, the stuff that's just been piled up, just wading through. I'm not quite sure I'm making sense, but anyway, if you can speak to any of that, I appreciate it, and thank you again for your time.
Yeah. Thanks, Holly, for the question. You know, first coming back, I think, you know, getting abstinent can be really painful, and knowing that it's going to be uncomfortable and accepting that it's going to be uncomfortable, I think are really important. And that means having a God squad around you to help you through that time. I'm told the physical, you know, the worst of the physical stuff might be a couple of days, but then it's, you know, around day 9, 10, 11, there's often another really big dip in emotional stability, where there's just, I don't know what it is. It's like that last bit comes out. But anyway, having people around you to help you through that is really key. And then if you're coming back, I think you don't just jump into step 10. I think you find that sponsor, you find somebody to work you through the steps quickly and do what you can to get to that 10. I will say that in my experience, I've seen a lot of people leave the program because they don't do enough of step 10. They get stuck in some of their defects and end up falling out. But anyway, that's what I have to say, Holly.
Thanks, Holly. Okay, we have time. One who has a question for Sigrida.
Christina L.
Christina?
Yep.
Okay, gotcha. Lisa? Anybody else?
Rivka.
Rivka.
Denise H.
Okay, let's stop with Denise, if we could, kindly ask, and just kind of see where we're at after that. So let's go with Christina, followed by Lisa. Christina, good morning.
Good morning. Oh, wait, am I still unmuted? Okay.
Yeah, you're good.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Sigrid. Talk about timely. I actually did a 10-step in a 10-step workshop yesterday at the World Service Convention. But my question is, when you were talking about how, on another question that you answered, you captured the 10 steps that you didn't get throughout the day during your 11th step. What does that look like for you? Because I've been feeling a little bit confused as to how to go about doing that and stuff. And the things that are coming up are things that, you know, the day was so busy, and then all of a sudden it's like coming to my mind that, like, oh, yeah. So I just want to know what your.
Okay, so I use, people do 11 steps a little bit differently. So there's not one way to do this. I know somebody who has their list of questions and they go through them every night alone. And send them to a sponsor if there's something to tell, you know, if there's something to tell. I sometimes go on a train, which I actually am on right now. I will sometimes go on a train, but even on the train, it's my option on what the format is. So I have a format of, I don't know, it's about a dozen questions or so. And those questions run through, what was I grateful for today? Who did I help today? What did I accomplish today? Was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? And if I discover something in that review, I may do a 10th step with my partner right there on the phone. If I'm writing it, I may stop my 11th step and do the 10th. And then the 11th step practice goes on. Was I kind and loving, respectful, attentive? There's a number. What could I have done better today? I don't know. There's a number of questions. And then I usually do a prayer at the end of my 11th step, asking God to remove the defects that blocked me today and help me to live His will better tomorrow. I hope that helps.
Yeah, thank you, Christine, for the question. Next up is Lisa, followed by Rivka. Lisa, good morning.
Hi, this is Lisa C. from New Jersey. Thank you so much. This was really fabulous. So my question is, if you've ever used the Rapid Step 10 form, and if you feel that is the same as writing out a 10th step, I found it very helpful, but just curious your opinion. But my real question is, like, how do I 10th step grief? You know, like, the sadness, longing, missing part. Like, not the, like, I'm resentful at myself because my mom died and I never said this or that, which is not really something that I experienced. But it's more that, like, oh, today I'm, like, in the grief. I'm in the missing and longing. And I have struggled to 10th step it. And I was just curious if you had any thoughts about that or any, you know, experience, strength, and hope. Thank you.
Sure, Lisa. Thank you for the question. I don't know what a rapid 10th step form is, so you'd have to show that to me. I most often use the OA toolkit, but the OA toolkit is an app on my phone. But what I will tell you is it just has a big free form block at the bottom for the selfish, restless, the selfish, dishonest, and fearful part. And so I will type my prayer into that as well. But so I would say it's a pretty rapid way of doing it because, I don't know, I find it really simple, but then again, I've done, I don't know, hundreds of them. So that's the answer on the rapid step. And if you do want to share that with me so I can take a look at it and tell you if I've ever done it, but it doesn't ring a bell for me. The 10th step on grief. Yeah, you know, we don't get to ask, remove the grief. And that's not what God's there for. God is there to help us through the grief. And frankly, I don't want to feel any of those feelings. I want to feel even all the time. And that's not realistic. That's not life. But that's, you know, who I am, right? That's the selfish person I am. So when I am grieving, or just sad about anything, sometimes I just have to ask God to help me through the feeling, help me feel it, because I don't want to. Like, my go-to is push it away, which is really unhealthy. And when God gives me the help and I actually spend the time and give grief a little time to let it be, it goes away it'll come back, but, you know, I'm able to move forward and just move on. But it doesn't get taken away, if that helps. It's not a defect.
Thanks, Lisa. Okay, yeah, thank you. Next up, we have Rivka, and then we'll wrap up with a question from Denise. Rivka, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks so much for your service, and thanks, Sigrid, for just a great, great presentation. Really got a lot out of it. So my question is, sometimes, you know, when I notice that, you know, I've had having reaction, all I do is, as I say, oh, that person's not following my script. And then it just, like, kind of pops my self-centeredness. And I can laugh at myself. And I feel like I don't need to go through, like, a whole identification of character defects or talking to someone. It's like, oh, that person's not following my script. And I guess my question is, is that enough? Or do you find that that's not enough? I don't know. That's my question. Like, should go through the whole thing, or if I feel like it's...
I think perhaps we... Did we lose Rivka there towards the end? Or is that just me?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was just to ask my question.
Okay,
anyway,
I heard most of it.
What? Oh, did you heard the question?
I think I heard it. You're asking that sometimes, sometimes, you know, you realize you're behaving in a certain way and you realize that you kind of laugh at yourself and move on.
Yeah, I just say, like,
is that okay?
That person's not following my script. So, you know, and then I can laugh at myself. But I don't go through the whole thing. Like, is that enough?
Heck yeah. Does it get you back to serenity?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, then it's enough.
It's enough. Okay.
Right? I mean, the goal is to get back to serenity and peace between the ears. And you acknowledge, all right, yeah, there I go again. Ha ha. Move on. Totally. Totally do that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thanks, Rivka. Okay. Final question. Ding, 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 ding from Denise. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning. I have a question about, you know, you mentioned several times about the God Squad, and I've heard many people talk about the God Squad. I do not have a God Squad because I guess I'm so comfortable being in isolation with my disease, and I've relapsed recently, and I'm not going down the path I really ultimately want to go. But when you're building this God Squad, I have found, and I've tried it, how do you remain persistent in your search for members? Because I feel like I call people, they don't call me back, So I get disheartened. So tell me about how you built your God Squad.
You know, it does take time, but I would say I have to put myself out there, right? So I have built, I would say initially, because, you know, my original OA roots were pre-COVID, so there were a lot more in-person meetings. So I still have quite a few people from that, and I still am a believer in in-person meetings. But I would say also through the 11-step train, calling, you know, even calling new members to welcome them on A Vision for You, making an effort, and then not really expecting that everybody is going to be in my God Squad, right? Like, from all the people I've met in OA, it's a pretty small number that I would consider in my God Squad. Sponsees and sponsors, even sponsors where it didn't work out, can be a part of your God Squad. But it does take an effort. You know, it takes two, for sure. Sending them 10th steps. You know, when you get to that point, sending people 10th steps. I have found that that's another way to open myself enough to people, and, you know, they see the real me, and then maybe they'll send me one, and we start doing that. Does that help, Denise?
Thank you, yes.
Okay.
Oh, good. Thanks, Denise. We're wrapping up just a little bit early for a particular reason. And just a couple of things. First, let me give you the share ID number once again for Sigrid's presentation this morning. Thank you, Sigrid. Just wonderful presentation. And that number is 22,721. That's 22721. And also hang out for once the recording stops, after we ask Sigrid for her contact information if you want to reach out to her. Before we do that, before we shut down the recording, a couple of things. So first, I'm just going to mention, it's not really commercial so much, as I'm just going to mention once again that we have, of course, our convention coming up in 75 days, 2 hours and, I don't know, 6 minutes, something like that. And this is the Power of the Big Book weekend. It's, where is it going to be? Well, when is it going to be? It's going to be November 7th through November 9th. And if you go on our website, which is www.avisionforyou, that's A-V-I-S-I-O-N, the numeral 4-Y-O-U.info, avisionforyou.info, you can get more information. But it's November 7th through the 9th. It's the Power of the Big Book weekend. You're going to have fellowship. You're going to hear speakers. You're going to be able to meet some of the people you hear and many others, importantly, too. And it's just a wonderful opportunity. I know it's a real springboard for recovery. Whether you've been around for a long time is terrific, but certainly someone that's newer or even struggling, this can be a real springboard for your recovery. So I urge you to come. It's going to be at, where is it at? That the Liberty Newark Liberty International Hotel, and right there at the airport, so you can just shuttle on over. But again, go on our website and you get some information on that. Okay, with that said, we're going to close before we end the recording with a reading from our namesake in the chapter of Vision for You on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.